From the public hearing portion of House Bill 2525, for the record, since yesterday's meeting on 2525, the public hearing portion of it, we have had an opportunity to meet further with Mr. Chip Lassendy from the governor's office, and have had an opportunity to do some work session with Verlina Crosley and others, and discussions relative to the effects of House Bill 2525. And are there any comments that we're going to need to have for the public record? If not, we can go right into the work session, and we will not conclude a complete work session on this bill today, but we will intend to hold both the public session and the work session open through Thursday and onto Friday, when all of the amendments can be incorporated into 2525. So with that, we'll close the this portion of the public hearing on 2525 and open the work session on 2525, and we'd like to have John Britton go ahead with the fiscal impacts on 2525.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What I intend to do as we begin this afternoon is to hand out a spreadsheet that I produced. It is not the fiscal impact statement per se, but it attempts to show the fiscal impacts and where the money flows and how it all gets put together. So I'm going to hand that out to you right now. And before I begin, if it were the intention of the subcommittee to recommend a due pass on House Bill 2525, we would need to include an amendment within 2525 that would appropriate the proper amounts to various agencies. Now, the governor's recommended budget, as it was printed last December, already contains these in the agency budget, but we in LFO have been removing the effects of this bill from all the budgets that have gone through, and will continue to do so.
Could I hear you say LFO?
That would be a little
just checking.
Legislative Fiscal Office Representative.
Thank you.
So that this could serve as the basis for the Legislative Council amendment to House Bill 2525 that pertain to the fiscal piece. And let me go over this with you. The spreadsheet is basically apportioned in three pieces. The first shows, if there was no House Bill 2525, what the expenditure limitation and the position authority would be for each of the seven agencies that are proposed to be part of the Central Hearings Panel. And you can see that the overall cost is about $18.1 million of total funds. About $1 million of that is a general fund piece, most of it occurring in the Adult and Family Services Division of the Department of Human Resources. And again, you can see the position authority and the FTE. Notice that includes the Employment Department. That is their internal hearings operation. They do unemployment insurance kinds of hearings, and they also do hearings on a contract basis with the Support Enforcement Division of the Department of Justice. The second chunk of this spreadsheet shows the overhead and indirect allocation with House Bill 2525, and the bottom line there is an increase of overhead in the Employment Department of about $2.1 million, 8 FTE, 8 positions. And it shows the allocation of that overhead to the participating agencies, including the Employment Department, which has an allocation of about $553,230. In reviewing the Employment Department's budget and the fiscal impact statement, it is my opinion that these overhead costs are justified. There is not fluff in this. This isn't a way to pad the Employment Department's budget. It is a legitimate attempt to capture the additional costs to manage a new central hearings panel. So that's my opinion about the overhead costs. The final section, the third section on this spreadsheet, shows simply adding the base amount with no House Bill 2525 to the allocated overhead, and you get to an overall cost of about $20.2 million. Then at the very bottom of the spreadsheet, on line 26, I've said that we need to add additional expenditure limitation for the Employment Department to accommodate their overhead payments from effectively an intra-departmental transfer of $553,000. In other words, their Employment Department expenditure limitation increase needs to be about $20.7 million.
Yeah, and the $553,230 is the overhead cost portion of that, which is really additional, and is that allocated among the seven agencies, including themselves, or the six other agencies?
No, it's effectively a double count in the Employment Department's budget. In other words, internally, they have to show an increase in their expenditure limitation of $553,000, which is their allocated piece of the $2.1 million overhead. So they effectively spend it once as the Employment Department paid to the Central Hearings Panel. Then the Central Hearings Panel pays it to the Central Hearings Panel employees. If we had taken created an entirely different agency, we would not have this showing up price. We would have it would be 20.7 less the $553,230 would be the cost. But because it's showing up in the Employment Department's budget, it's counted twice, is the point.
Okay.
It's not an additional cost. It just shows up as expenditure limitation in two places within the Employment Department.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm reading this correctly, the additional cost for doing it this way is the $2.1 million.
That's it. Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, that's correct.
Plus, Mr. Chair,
yes,
eight full-time equivalency positions.
Oh, very interesting. Aren't we buying you?
Representative Crow, that's correct. The $2.1 million buys you the additional positions.
Mr. Chair, also, but it takes for more than just the eight positions.
Correct. That's right. Mr. Yeah. Chair, Representative Crop, it adds some services and supply costs as well.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Britton, so
sure.
I am then hopefully assuming properly then that the amounts that will be transferred to the new central hearings panel from each agency, those numbers will be deducted from those agencies' current budgets, and those employees will also be deducted from their authorized full-time equivalency positions. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Croft, not quite. It will show up. Well, you have the position authority correct. The positions in FCE will be deducted from each of these agencies' budgets. That's correct. The expenditure limitation, however, will remain in their budgets because we're not doing an expenditure transfer. We're actually, for example, AFS will actually pay the Employment Department $1,960,006. So the expenditure limitation has to remain within AFF, but it also has to appear in the employment department's budget because they're going to actually pay the people who work for the central hearing panel.
Okay, now that certainly makes sense to me. I just want to be quite certain that even though we're allowing the expenditure limitation, that in reality that money is being transferred from that agency to pay for these positions.
That, Representative Krupp, that is correct.
Okay. Already described in the budget narrative, so everybody is.
Mr. Chair and Senator Crow, we can put that in a budget report. Absolutely.
I would prefer that. I want to be very clear about what our intent is with this process here. Well, this is certainly has been a somewhat controversial issue for some time, and I want to be quite certain that we are very, very clear about our intent with not only the policy portion of this, but most certainly from the fiduciary side of it to the taxpayer.
Representative Clark and Mr. Chair, we will get that in the budget report.
Thank you. And it is my understanding, Mr. Brenton, that the 128 employees, for instance, the 13 employees at AFS right now that are presently doing hearings, they may yet continue to remain at that particular department so that we don't have a shift of overhead costs of rental space and those kinds of things for the central hearings panel.
Mr. Chair, that is my understanding, that the 13 people in AFS and all the reps would stay exactly physically where they are today. However, the 13 positions and the 13 people in those positions would actually become employees of the employment department. So, as Representative Krupp pointed out, the position authority would be removed from AFS and it would be put only in the employment department.
Sure, this is the intention to centrally locate all of these people at some point, and we're going to leave them dispersed.
Mr. Chair and Senator, so I don't have the answer to that question.
Really? Nobody's planned that? It doesn't seem to make sense to leave them dispersed out there in the agencies beyond this two-year period.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Troy, I do know that this is a pilot project, at least that's of 4 years, and I don't think it was the intention to gather them all up into one location, and then if the pilot was ended and we wanted to go back to the way things were, then redistribute them back. I don't think that was the intention of House Bill 2525. So
I just wonder how easy it's going to be for to manage all of these people as they're scattered out in diverse departments. Now, one of the advantages of this was to coordinate and for them to be able to do different kinds of hearings and one person to travel and do three different kinds of hearings, perhaps. This seems like it's going to be hard. So I was thinking that it would be centrally located.
This was a similar question that I had asked early on to Mr. Lassiter, the concern that I had relative to how independent will people feel if the same folks are basically handling it. And they say, yeah, but we've switched our payroll. We no longer are paid by the blank department, we are paid by the central hearings panel, even though they're in the same office. So I would perhaps that we could invite Adrian Sexton to come forward, and maybe you can respond to that on behalf of the legislative fiscal office as well, if you'd like to do that.
Maybe Verlina would like to.
Verlina, would you like to come forward too? And
well, Mr. Chair, for the record, Adrian Sexton, Legislative Fiscal Office. The discussion of whether or the intent was to centrally, physically house everybody in one place so that the hierarchy of the management structure, as Senator Troop pointed out, might be made easier. The bill also contains Section 21 of an oversight committee, which will consist of 4 legislators, 2 members appointed by the governor, and 2 members appointed by the attorney general, and they will have responsibility during this pilot project to take a look at how it's working and to make recommendations that they may believe are appropriate for additional legislation. Specifically, it says those that the committee, the advisory committee, deems necessary to increase the effectiveness, fairness, and efficiency of the operations of the hearing officer panel, and recommendations for any additional legislation governing the operations, and they can also conduct studies. That is an item that's noted in the fiscal impact statement that is to be staffed by the employment department to the extent that funding is available for that purpose. I did point out in the fiscal impact statement that that is not a component at this time in the employment department's budget, and although I didn't use the term in the fiscal impact statement, it could be somewhat problematic if that function could not be absorbed with current resources. Based on history with legislative committees that have a typical scope of work, my estimate is that it could range in anything from about 0.2 FTE to 0.5 FTE, depending on the amount of work that the advisory committee would like to pursue. So that is still would be an issue for the employment department's budget.
Ms. Chair, Linda Trow, this particular piece was very much discussed, and one of the reasons that, and she's covered it, there is an oversight we are going to learn in some areas sort of as we go. The second piece is that there's a lot of hearings that are now, administered by telephone and on location that are in various sites already. Our own, hearings officers or administrative law judges in the employment department are almost all telecommuters, for example. They actually do the telephone hearings from their home or from a separate location now. So it was basically to leave them where they are, at least initially. It was also, you would see in the bill and probably have seen, that they're all still covered by their same or similar unions, because there's a number of different unions that represent these individuals, that they are in different agencies. So it's hard to leave those kinds of things alone and focus more on what we were talking about yesterday, sort of the training and the administration pieces first before we would move into those. And we may find that we don't need to move them at all because they are sort of generally dispersed across the state right now.
Can we assume that, since they're going to be located there, that they will get the cases related to the agency where they're located to have the hearings on?
Mr. Antendicho, I think that Chip Lazenby did talk about that last time. I think for the first 2 years, there's at least a general feeling and assumption that a lot of the same people would be doing a lot of the same types of cases because of the training that will need to be done. But it does allow different people to opt out, and if they do not believe, for example, that they are or have in the past received a fair hearing from their perspective, they can at least once choose to have a different hearings officer.
The agency, I believe, also has that opportunity if they do not believe that they're administrative rules have been applied appropriately by the hearings officer. I believe they also have an opportunity to, in effect, opt out or to appeal the decision as well. So it's a bilateral arrangement under the overall hearings panel approach.
The advisor is a committee that's advising the 4 legislators and 4 other people, I guess it's a total of 8. I haven't read the bill, so I don't know the details. So do they actually have the authority to direct this hearings operations panel? Do they just advise, or what do? They just advise.
And the code is an advisory function.
Okay. Does anyone direct them?
The chief hearings officer, and that person is appointed, if you will, or hired by the employment department director.
And that person reports to no one except he's advised by this committee.
He actually reports to the director. I think Representative Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, yesterday you asked about whether some portion of those people would be like an assistant director. In effect, that's basically what would be happening. I have right now three assistant directors that run like the unemployment insurance program, the employment service program. This would be very much like the assistant director for chief hearing support. It would have to be an attorney and some other requirements that are not on the other assistant directors, but very much in that capacity.
Would you believe that that's somebody then who would be under your direction and would be would report to you?
Chair and Senator Cho, that is the way the bill is designed, and the answer is yes. And I've also been told that there would be a lot of input on both the selection as well as whether or not that person and myself as the director are handling that piece properly.
Thank you very much. And we did receive yesterday on page 3 kind of a breakdown of the fiscal impact statement of proposed legislation relative to House Bill 2525, as they engrossed a kind of a breakdown of the positions that we've just been talking about. I didn't total up all those positions. I'm assuming that that's 136. You tell me that for certain.
I'm going to have to ask Adrian Sexton if they total 136.
136. Okay.
And she is saying.
Again, Adrian Sexton. Yes, I did calculate those repeatedly and associated them with the numbers that John has presented in his spreadsheet, and the two coincide.
Excellent.
To summarize, at least our intention with the amendment, the Legislative Council amendment implementing the budget pieces, what we would then see would be in that amendment would be lines 9 through 14 with respect to all the agencies, the seven agencies, with the exception of the Employment Department. So, for example, AFS, would Adult and Family Services Division, would see a total funds increase as amended in House Bill 2525 of $160,299. The Employment Department's expenditure limitation in their budget would be increased by line 27, which is $20,716,910. The other adjustment that you would see in these amendments would be, as we talked earlier, about the position authority and the FTEs would be removed from those agency budgets and placed in the Employment Department.
That would be lines 1 through 6 under total funds?
Actually, lines 1 through 7 would be removed.
Okay.
On the positions and FTE. And line 25 for the positions in FTE, 36 positions, 135.25 FTE would be added to the Employment Department's budget.
135.25. Okay.
136 positions, 135.25 FTE.
All those positions currently filled, and with all those bodies accompany the positions?
Exception of the aid.
Exception of the aid.
Right. Is that right? I don't need to.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cho, I don't know right now if they are all filled. This reflects that they are all filled, and the entire FTE is coming across to the Employment Department.
Authorized, I think, at this particular point, certainly within those budget parameters.
If for whatever reason they're not filled, they would be filled, and it would be up to whoever is in charge of this agency as soon as we get the staff on board to fill.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cho, my answer is I believe that's correct. Their intention is to fill these positions if they are not already filled. And as Representative Butler pointed out, the 8 FTEs that are created, newly created to deal with the Central Hearings Panel, to manage the Central Hearings Panel, are not filled. They would be new positions new FTE. The understanding is that those would be filled by first of Berlina choosing a director and then the director filling a subordinate position. Is that the way that works?
Mr. Chair and Senator, so Ms. Crosley is nodding yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we can't move on this because we're
right.
Limited on our senators.
Well, we can't move on it, but if there are any questions, we could go ahead and ask those questions now, and then we could go ahead and take a look at the contractual amendments as well, so that we can go as far as we possibly can with the issues that you have. Are there any questions relative to the budget issues or the FTE transfers that Mr. Breton has provided for us? Okay, there being none, we'll just go ahead and have you discuss then the conceptual.
Chair, I'm in a foreign land at this point. I have several amendments and actually made the I think you could I will distribute and you could talk about it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, yesterday two new proposals were brought to the subcommittee. One was from the Oregon University system. Benton Cairns was here, and if you wish to ask him any additional questions, he can be available. But the amendment that is being distributed to you now, the -A27, the Hospital 2525, are the amendments that were drafted to address their issue of removing them from the consideration of the bill relative to contested cases that they conduct within the institutions or within the Department of Higher Education. And the language in front of you would accomplish that. The language is based on that which Melinda Greer had drafted for the university system. And I did provide Mr. Cairns with a copy of it, and he indicates that it meets the language requirements of their conceptual proposal from yesterday.
It's based on that language, but isn't it different?
It is, Senator Cho. It is a little bit wordier.
Yeah, well, better.
Better,
much more understandable.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Cho, it does clarify the Department of Higher Education and those individual institutions within the department.
Mm-hmm. Are there any discussions relative then, any further discussions relative to the proposed Amendment -A27, which delineates some of the hearings officer's issues relative to the Department of Higher Education. And
my only question is this amendment specific enough so that the Department of Higher Education and the hearings officers do know in when higher ed is advanced and when it's not, so that the delineation is clearly made so you don't have litigation or you don't have conflict between higher ed saying we're exempt from this and somebody saying no you're not and getting into problems.
Mr. Chair, Senator Todd, I'm not certain the level of interpretation that the chief hearing officer might go to assert, for instance, that the hearing officer panel needed to get into the issue that is subject to this exemption. That is, those points that Mr. Guerin pointed out yesterday, things like issues with campus visitors and on contracts and vendor issues.
Again, I'll point out that we did meet briefly last evening with Ms. Crosley from the Department of Employment and Mr. Lassenby and others that are vitally involved, and I'd like to invite Ms. Crosley, if she'll go ahead and address that to the best of her understanding relative to the Department of Higher Education and institutions of higher education in the state.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Trow, we believe that it does do pretty much what you're saying. Karen is in one of the other hearings room and has told us to come get him when you had questions, and so he is trying to come into that. But it is based on what we have been talking about. It is supposed to be addressing the issues that he raised. It does not cause a budgetary shortfall because we were not transferring positions or anything like that. And it was going to be billed under a conceptual method for per hour. So the budget piece is fine, and he needs to assert whether or not it does what he needs to.
Okay.
Sir, can I ask Groton some questions?
Senator Trow's right.
But I looked at your amendment, and I think it's much improved and so forth. My question is it specific enough so that that everybody is clear on who is covered and when you're covered and who is not covered and when you're not covered?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Grattan Karen, representing the Oregon University System. That's quite a sprint for me. To your question, Senator Trow, this is a much improved amendment. It would, in fact, I think, draw a bright white line between those who are a student, an employee, or receiving benefits from the department on one of our campuses, and would thereby exclude those not enumerated.
Those are clearly defined, and everything else is covered.
And
you know that, and they know that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Trow, that is correct, and for the record, I would state that it is the intent of the Department of Higher Education that all those persons and cases that are not enumerated in the amendment are covered by HALPA 2525.
If that's on the record,
thank you very much, Senator Trow. And do I understand correctly that that would be inserted on page 4, and it would be a new subparagraph 4 in section 9?
That's the way it's written, Mr. Chair, and I think it's probably a fair
one. That'd be a good idea that if this bill is accompanied with any kind of explanation of the budget bill. Not really.
It's really not a budget bill.
It's part of the Employment Division's budget.
Ultimately, yes.
Maybe it makes sense to have it stated in writing in terms of what Grattan just said about the coverage. Maybe.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Trow, if you would like, I can have remarks prepared for your use or consideration in at the time the bill reaches the Senate floor to be read to the record, and that would supplement what I said here for the record, which I think are fairly straightforward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little walk back.
Okay, then on page 3, after line 45, we have another, this is the dash 28 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, yes, the dash A28 for the issues brought forward by Chip Lazenby from the governor's office yesterday, supported by Representative Shetterly. The bill as it was originally drafted exempts specifically elected officials, the Secretary of State, Treasurer, Attorney General, Governor, so forth. And the State Land Board is made up of the Governor, the Secretary of State, and the State Treasurer. So by operation of their position, it was believed that the State Land Board should be exempted from the Central Hearing Panel requirements, and the A28 would accomplish that by listing them as an exempt state agency.
Okay. And those are the only amendments that we're considering at this time that have been prepared for us to at least examine. Are there any questions relative to those representative answers?
Question that applies to Section 9. We see a great many exceptions. Is the Oregon military, the National Guard, the military system of justice, is that, I'm assuming that would be exempt. Is that because that's not considered an agency?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I'm going to have to pluck from my brain filing cabinet of experience with state government, which in this case goes back to about 1988 when I last looked at the military department, and it's my recollection that the majority of their budget is federal funds. While they're operating as the National Guard, and I'm looking at Representative Leonard, hoping that he might have some experience with this, I can't answer the question as to whether, for some reason, they are not construed as a state agency under this.
We did, Michelle, we did pass a bill earlier this session dealing with that issue in terms of employment appeals rights, and when they were. They put them under federal rules. So that was very early this session.
And they may be covered under one of those sections of A through H in that subparagraph 3 on page 4, Representative Hansen, but not having gone through each of those various sections to find out which of the ORS chapters are covered and exempting each of the various organizations. It looks like that there's a dozen or so organizations, a dozen or more organizations that some of those go from, for instance, EGOs from 706 to 716.
I think those only apply to the Department of Commerce and Business Services.
Yes, sure, that's correct.
Okay.
Sure, you have a quorum. If you wanted to move these amendments, you probably could get them into the bill.
With the quorum, are there any, and we are in work session. Thank you, Senator Cho. I wasn't looking around and seeing what was going on here. Are there any further discussions relative to the issues of the two amendments, the dash A27 and A28 amendments that have been proffered to us today? Are there any objections to those being incorporated into the bill?
Object to A27.
A27? Okay. Any other objections to...
You just prefer to have them included?
Okay. If there are no other objections, Representative Hansen, Representative Messerly, myself, Senator Tro, Senator Ferrioli, are you in accordance with that?
In accordance.
We'll go ahead then and incorporate A28 and A27 into the record.
And the emergency clause.
Okay. Would you like to go ahead and have emergency clause at the very end?
All right. Mr. Chair and members, yesterday also was presented to you a dash A26 amendments to 2525, which are an emergency clause provision. As decided by the chair yesterday, this would cause the bill to take effect on August 1st of 1999. As you know, ordinarily a bill takes effect 90 days post signing die unless it has a specific effective date. There is currently before the Assembly Senate Bill 1315, which has passed the Senate unanimously and is now in the House Rules Committee, and the measure would cause all bills to take effect on January 1 following an accident unless they had a specific effective date. in order to process the hearing panel concept timely because of the transfers of positions on January 1 of 2000, in order to allow the department to create the panel, appoint the chief hearing officer, and get the implementation up and running in time to receive files and cases on January 1, it really needs to take effect earlier. And this would ensure that they have that time frame to do it.
Relative to Section 205 of House Bill 2525, which is Amendment Dash 826, are there any discussion, any discussions or comments relative to that emergency clause? Any objections to including the 826 amendments? There being none, Sean will go ahead and incorporate the 826 amendments to the emergency clause and to House Bill 2525.
Chair,
Senator Crowe?
Do we, and again, I apologize for not having read this bill as well as I should have. What's this is a pilot program.
Yes.
What determination is to be made after 4 years as to whether or not it's been a success or not? How do we know whether this has been money well spent or not? Are we setting up anything to be measured? Any goals to be achieved?
Pilot
it ought to. If we're going to make it permanent, we ought to have some evidence that it's been worth doing. Is it in the bill?
I really couldn't speak to that. I don't know that there are any that I'm aware of that just provides the operative date and sunset date relative to the final conclusion of it.
Chair, you are correct. You are correct. And Senator Cho, that has been part of the discussion, but it is not in bill. One potential could be that you could have that developed through some kind of budget note or something like that, and then have that legislative oversight group and the agency come back on those pieces, but it is not in the bill.
I think we ought to ask them to prepare some sort of justification based on a track record of success as to whether or not we want to continue this. I think it's going to be really hard to move back once you move this direction. So even to call it a pilot probably is a mistake. It's probably permanent, but if it's a pilot, then by golly, there ought to be something that you're showing as it's been achieved as worth doing.
That would be helpful for us as well.
Can we go ahead then and ask legislative fiscal to assist us with the ascertainable standards of success and what the expectation of achievement would be relative to this pilot project, and then we'll go ahead from there. And then we can go ahead and have that language in the form of a budget note, and certainly Representative Shetterly should be included in that discussion, because I think he has come, as well as the government representative, Mr. Lashley, should be certainly a portion of what they expect to accomplish on this.
Mr. Chair, we can certainly work with Chip Lazenby and Representative Shirley to come up with something that everybody can agree on within the budget report.
Good.
Okay. One question to you, Mr. Chair. We can go ahead with the, if you wish, with the LFO recommendation on the budget pieces and get legislative counsel working on an amendment if you would like to do that.
If I think it would be appropriate that we've come this far, and after having met last evening with yourselves and representatives from the Department of Employment and from the Governor's Office, I think it's appropriate that we move forward at this point with that through the Legislative Council to get that prepared so that we can take a look at this. And I don't conceptually, I don't know what it will look like relative to an amendment that will be necessary to ODOT and other of the various budgets that are involved here. I'm going to have to leave that up to council to tell us what the exercise of authority will have over those issues, and certainly we'll need permission from the chairs to move forward on that. So at that point, let's go ahead and have you prepare that, and then receive direction from the co-chairs. Okay, then what we will do is we'll go ahead and carry this session over, both the public hearing session and the work session of House Bill 2525. We'll open and close it tomorrow, and then we'll open and close it for good, we hope, on Friday and wrap up. Now, Friday, it's my understanding that we may be a little late in session, but we will plan to meet that afternoon to do the final wrap-up on 2525 so that it can continue its circuitous course through the rest of the legislative process. Senator Ferrielli.
Chairman, I think the Philly is experiencing a rash of additional hearings on Friday because they're giving me a rash on the But our Salmon Steelhead Committee has also been shut down Friday, and we've already advertised for a Friday afternoon meeting. So we may have a conflict because two of our members are the co-chairs of that committee.
We may need to borrow you for just a few moments to finalize the actual budget portion of this. My notes indicate that the budget amendment and the budget note will be the last portion of this that we'll need to act upon. You both have an understanding by looking at the fiscal impact that's been prepared by Mr. Gordon and having benefited from the discussion and the excellent input from Senator Control relative to the expectations that what that may look like. So with that, we'll go ahead and carry over the public hearing and work session of 2525 until tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Chairman, I misspoke also. Three of our subcommittee members are also members of the SR2 team. Representative Leonard is a not a nominal member of the
committee. Has he been moving in and out fishing? Is that okay?
Yes, he has been.
There's a possibility to make this work. The Democrats may reluctantly give you a few votes on the
Thanks. We
may be negotiable a little later.
I would be interested before we get started in our next hearing. I would be interested in the rationale of the entire higher education being either included or excluded. I didn't get a chance to visit with Representative Leonard relative to that. Did you have any feel for that? Am I missing something there?
I think higher ed had thought about being excluded entirely, and then Bratton indicated they decided that they would just do the intra-institutional things. And basically, students and faculty, where there are already grievance procedures and mechanisms that they do these things internally within the institution. But the rest of the stuff could well go under it, and that was what I thought Bratton had decided that they wanted to do. Now,
and
why Randy just wanted a complete exclusion of them.
I'd be interested in, because I just didn't want to miss anything if there was but his feeling was that it should be totally excluded.
Because Randy's feeling as far as that one. Why, I don't know. Just Grattan, I think, has not said that to anybody.
Okay.
But Grattan's not the only person who speaks so highly.
Okay. And it may be that the fiscal impact may be such that with not knowing exactly what the fiscal impact and being an educational institution, it may be a concern there. And I just didn't want to, if there's a that there's an opinion that we may be going past something. I just didn't want to mention it all.
I think he would have articulated.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll look for those issues then. And now we will open then the we're going right into work sessions. All right. We have public hearing on work session then on House Bill 5002. So we will open the public hearing on 5002. Would you like to go ahead, Georgine?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. I have distributed a packet of information for you. Let me tell you what I gave you. On top, during the public hearing, I believe it was Senator Lynn raised the issue about how much DASH charges small agencies. And so on the top is a two-page document that DASH prepared that explains their approach to the charges to small agencies. They have agreed to reduce that. And we'll get into that in the recommendation. The next document in that package is a memo from me to Chair Butler and members of the committee that includes my recommendation and budget notes. Following that is a legal-sized spreadsheet that summarizes the entire department and reductions on two pages. It's small print for which I apologize and kind of complicated, but I'll go over how to read that. Finally, in that package is a letter to the co-chairs regarding request to use some unscheduled federal funds in the current financial. That describes what's in your package, and if it's the chair and the chair's pleasure, I can go straight into the memo that defines the recommendation, describes the recommendation.
We're there's a quorum present, so why don't we go ahead into work session then on House Bill 5002, and you've met with Director Yunker and/or members of his staff relative to your recommendations.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have shared the recommendations with the staff.
Okay, we will go into work session on House Bill 5002. And hear from Legislative Circle Office, Georgine Bailey.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll just go straight down the page and we can discuss anything that you want to stop and discuss. The co-chairs, of course, ask all the agencies to identify 4% reductions. And so number one is the reduction in general fund of $365,682 to reflect the 4% reduction. That reduction includes a one-half FTE in the Office of the Director. And the reductions are accomplished by reducing the Director's Office $116,168, the Governor's National Resource Office by $120,680, the Office of Education and Workforce Policy by $46,274. The Office of Health Plan Policy and Research by $62,500 and the Community Development Office by $20,060. The number two demonstrates the 4% reduction in other funds. The department, although the 4% reduction typically applied only to general funds, the department offered these reductions in its other funds because some of it, about half of it, is about half of their revenue comes to them from assessments to other agencies. And of those assessments, it's generally believed that about 30% of that is general funds. So they have offered these reductions also. Total of $7,333,509 the following divisions are where those reductions come. Budget and Management, $527,402. State Controllers Division, $586,602. IRMD, $1,520,950. And one FTE. Human Resource Services Division, $378,268. Public Employees Benefit Board, $86,551. Transportation Purchasing and Print Services Division, $693,923. Facilities Division, $447,291. Risk Management, $2,307,524. Internal Support Division, 2 FTE and $659,419. Office of Education and Workforce Policy, $3,824. Office of Health Plan Policy and Research, $60,439. And Community Development Office, 1 FTE and $61,316.
So these are all reductions, both in number one and number two. I was 4% below the current service level to do these things.
Mr. Chair, can you tell these are 4% reductions applied to the government recommended budget.
And was that a current service level budget or not?
Yes, there were enhancements in a number of those divisions, so it would be the 4% reduction of the current service level plus the enhancement.
In addition, if there is a discrepancy, which there probably will, between the money we've appropriated for the salary package and what's in it, we're expecting them to fund that internally. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, can you show that as well?
Okay. Now, do we have any idea whether or not with all of these reductions, and I think this would be true for other agencies as well, plus that we're going to put them in a bind with these kinds of reductions?
And Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, I think it will, well, certainly will force them to tighten up their belt. But they did indicate in discussions with the co-chairs and the chair and LSO staff that these were the areas where they would feel the least impact on programs.
Okay. I hope that when we get to the legislative budget, we also we don't forget our standards and allow a big increase there when we cut this. This level.
On the contrary, Senator Cho, that's why we're extracting these 4% efficiencies so we can take the legislative budget
and
inflate
it.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. That's fully explainable. And let it be known for the record that Laurie and Teresa are both here and they're already so funded they can't tighten their belts any further than what this is indicating here. So,
but you know, it sounds maybe trivial that I'm making these points, but also it's not necessarily because I don't think these have been, there's been fat in these budgets. I really think that if you cut them 4% and then you underfund them for the salary package, it seems to me that you do get in the way of effective operation. So I guess that's the point of my opinion.
Thank you, Senator Cho. And in all fairness, the governor recognizing that, you know, there could be perhaps a shortfall even in his budget request, he'd ask for as much as a 10%.
Well, he'd ask them to show what they would do if they needed to do that. He didn't ask for the cut. You're asking for the cut. There's a difference.
And I appreciate that distinction. And we wouldn't go to the 10%. Unfortunately, we haven't needed that at this point.
Okay, continuing, Mr. Chairman, this number three is an explanation of the reduction in DAS assessments to other agencies. Those reductions, the number two does not reflect the reduction in assessments in the total sum. Most of those divisions are funded because other agencies ask DAS to provide services for them and their fee for service. Only some of those divisions are funded entirely by assessments. So the reduction to assessments in other agencies totals $2,410,355. The assessments are made up of some of the reductions. Let me share it with you. It's summarized on the spreadsheet on page 2 of the reductions that we talked about in budget and management of $527,202. If you look on the long spreadsheet, page 2, under the gray tab, you see proposed reductions funded by assessment in column A, budget and management, $202,046 of their reduction is funded by assessments, so it will reduce assessments. Likewise, $645,000 of the controller's reduction, $334,000 of human resource services reduction, and $115,000 of facilities division reduction impact the effect of the assessments to other agencies. In addition to that, those four amounts total $1,337,351. In addition to those packages, there were two packages that were in the government, that were in the agency request that did not come forward to the governor's budget process. The price list was developed to provide funding for these packages. Those two packages total $659,000. The next thing that enters into the reduction is the small agency reduction, and that's what the first two pages refer to. In a nutshell, the division, the department looked at a number of ways to reduce the assessments to small agencies and came to the conclusion that in the 99-2001 biennium, they would reduce the charges by 50% to agencies that have budgets of less than $250,000. And would establish a work group to look at the best way to minimize the charges to small agencies. Those reductions to small agencies total $84,156. In addition to that, the changes in the Secretary of State's method of charging for audits caused a $329,000 reduction in the Department of Administrative Services costs. In other words, their payments to the Secretary of State, and where they get that money to pay the Secretary of State is by assessing other agencies. That totals the $2.4 million that it costs
them. Are there any questions relative to the assessment reductions of $2.4 million?
Moving on to number four, will be...
Are those the permanent reductions or one-time reductions? Of the most reduction.
It sounded like you were doing the reductions and having a study.
That just relates to the, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Torrey, the study just relates to how you count DAS charges small agencies. They provide accounting and a variety of services to those small agencies, budgeting service.
Mm-hmm.
And the two pages that I distributed talked about options to reduce the overall assessment. There were four options: privatize or semi-privatize agencies, bill on an hourly basis, which could reduce it but could also increase it because often the small agencies are the ones who need the most assistance. Fund budget and management and director's office and other central government activities with general fund, and then reallocated on the central government service charge. But before they could do that, it would have to be built into the budget. And number four is charge a flat fee for services with defined set of service to the small agency. And so their alternative for the biennium that we're talking about, 9901, is to reduce them by 50%. And for both assessment-based fees and direct charges for services.
Just for this
biennium. And then the work group is to determine the most appropriate methodology for providing these services so that they can bring that back to the legislature in the following biennium, 2003.
This responds to the concern that Senator Lim had with regard to some of the small agencies, which appeared to be, a Volkswagen being hit by a pretty severe 16-wheeler or 18-wheeler. So, and that does address, and it's a good faith attempt by the Department of Administrative Service to go ahead and recognize that those agencies maybe not be able to bear as much percentage cost as some of the larger agencies can.
Hopefully, very much money to fund it to begin with.
The other issue, I think it was a long-term issue out of that, was the Secretary of State audit assessment. And I think that we pretty much received consensus from the Secretary of State's office that the audit reduction, the scope of audits in each department could be limited to exactly what it was that needed to be audited within each of the various departments. And pass on the direct cost.
I don't think that's a good idea.
And there is a budget note relative to the audit issue that, Ms. Bailey will take us to momentarily. Other questions of the members of the committee?
Number four, there were a number of packages on the Information Resource Management Division. There was considerable discussion with the agency and the co-chairs and the chair and others about these packages, and essentially I'm recommending adjustment in one of the packages, package 143, the Internet Electronic Commerce. That package was a request of $811,000 in 5 FTE. I'm recommending that it be reduced by 2 FTE and $189,784. This is all other funds. And this would allow the department to phase in the implementation of the electronic process and then see how it's working and see if they need the other 2 FTE or make whatever adjustments are required. Number five, decrease other funds expenditure limitations of package 164. This is in the Human Resource Services Division. It's a package to improve employment of persons with disabilities in the state workforce. And one FTE, the reason I recommend it, decreasing the limitation is because this package depends on the passage of Senate Bill 274. When 274 is heard by the Ways and Means Committee, these funds and this FTE can be incorporated in that bill.
Do we know whether the bill can be heard or not?
I can't answer that, Mr. Chair.
The bill is in Ways and Means?
Yes, it is.
Maybe the our chair can. Do you know whether Senate 274 is alive or not?
There's another Senate bill also that's in question over on 7 as well, Senator, and there's going to be issues relative to both of those, and so I've just gone ahead with the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Office at this point.
Sort of assuming they're not
assuming that they will take the normal course, and Legislative Fiscal is kind of up on what's happening there, assuming that they're not alive in this particular case.
Number six is a number of technical adjustments. The state treasurer changed the way it charges for debt service. It previously charged more for debt management service on general obligation bonds, and they just look at that, and the increase in revenue bonds and certificates of participation led them to the conclusion that they needed to revise their schedule. Because the facilities division and a couple of the other divisions have COP, certificates of participation, the department needs an increased expenditure limitation of the funds expenditure limitation of $55,080 to pay these charges by the state treasury. There was a technical adjustment in the essential packages 030 and 050 in the Office of Health Plan Policy and Research. Those amounts need to be adjusted. General fund increased by $30,170. Other funds decreased by $30,170 in package 030. And in package 050, we need to decrease personal services by $41,573 and $22,566 other funds. And increase services and supplies in for general fund of $11,403. The net effect of all these adjustments is a decrease of $52,736 other funds. Key increase other funds in package 030 and internal support division by $143,888. What caused this? That when they developed the budget, they ISD has internal support division has to pay systems charges to. I believe it's the IRMG, and they included only 1 month of the charge instead of 24 months, so this country gives them the 24 months of limitation to pay that. The department has looked at, this relates to package 194 in the transportation training and purchasing and print services division, the federal surplus property program. This was a package where they asked for 2 positions and $150,000. We looked at that realigned staff to address the workload issues and can give that back. So we're going to eliminate the two. I recommend eliminating the two FTE and the other funds of expenditure limitation of $150,748. B, increase expenditure limitation for the Public Employees Benefit Board computer project. In the emergency board last year, the April 98 meeting, they received authority to expenditure limitation of $347,300 to implement an automated system. They went about doing that, hired a consultant, and the consultant gave them some recommendations, and they have since found that there are other alternatives in addition to what the consultant provided, and they believe that better approach to it. They have only spent $30,947 in this biennium, and so they're asking essentially to have the 9901 expenditure limitation increased by the remaining amount of the 9799 limitations that didn't spend. F, increased expenditure limitation in package 158 for governmental geographic information system user services, $124,188 salary fund. This is simply an exercise, an adjustment to make the expenditure limitation equal to the amount of revenue that they have in the package in the budget. In package 140, which is an information resource services resources management division, the package relocate part of some of their network. This is just a technical adjustment to no budget impact, but that you need to approve this so the automated budget information system handles these things correctly. Increase personal services by $7,000. Decrease of services and supplies by $7,000. And again, ACE is another technical adjustment. Reduce the base budget revenue by $5,843,382 other funds in relation to packages 153, 154, and 155. These are the packages that continue the voice of video and online services. Number seven, reduce package 295, which is the automatic allocation of lottery funds for gambling addiction by $612,764 lottery funds. Again, this is a package that depends on passage of Senate Bill 118, and if that package passes, the expenditure limitation can be added to that bill.
That's the 1%.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair. An alternative, the subcommittee could consider is approving the package and the expenditure limitation and ask budget and management to unschedule the dollars pending passage of SB 118. Number eight, revised funding source for geographic information systems. This is reducing the ballot measure 66 lottery fund for packages 157 and 158. These are, one is coordination of activities for GIS, and the other is includes positions and dollars to address some of the salmon plan initiatives and some of the work that the natural resource agencies would need to have done for those activities.
Are there questions with regard to that item number eight on the $1.2 million reduction of lottery funds? I know that's an issue that's exactly where Representatives Messerly Representatives Messerly and Leonard both serve on that, as does Senator Ferrioli. And there have been other questions which have arisen over the GIS system in the past.
Well, I just wanted to point out to the chair and members that this reduces the revenue but leaves the agency with the expenditure limitation to provide the services. It's expected that past natural resource agencies would simply purchase the services from DAS as opposed to the direct lottery allocation to the department.
Okay, thank you.
Nine, remove the Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research Budget from House Bill 5002. This simply takes the entire balance of that office out of this budget It's my understanding that there are plans to incorporate in another budget bill all of the expenditures of the Oregon Health Plan and activities related to the Oregon Health Plan.
I don't remember us discussing this. Did we ever discuss this in the committee? A lot of these things I don't remember us discussing. Yeah.
I don't recall that. I certainly recall.
It seems like that as this budget is unfolding, it's just a mystery to me where all these things came from.
It's been a long time since we've heard.
It's been a long time, it has, but also it seems like that there are changes in here that we really didn't talk much about, did we?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, some of these are adjustments to achieve the
they're sitting in other subcommittees, is that it? So that they do things there, like the health plan and research budget, somebody else makes that decision, and we jump and they bark.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cho, it's my understanding that it is, I think, perhaps the human resources subcommittee that they're talking about accumulating all the costs associated with the health plan. And that's similar. I don't know if you're aware that the Natural Resources Subcommittee held a public hearing on the governor's natural resource office. And they're who are more involved with the natural resources agencies are attempting to understand understand all of the expenditures that are related to the salmon plan and other natural resource issues.
About the GIS, I don't remember us discussing that. Did we just talk about that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cho, I don't recall any direct testimony about reducing the lottery funds in the subcommittee on this. Geographic Information Systems and the Department of Administrative Services was in policy packages because the source of funding that was expected to support this in the past was intended to come from state agencies purchasing the services of the geographic information systems. It was put in as a package with the ballot measure 56 lottery funds because the Department of Administrative Services in the past had to subsidize those services with revenues from the general government data center.
I'm looking for the issues. You know, these are some of the policy packages, but
my memory's not too good. It's been a long time since
Dan Kennedy talked about certain portions of human resources, portion of it there, and I was just looking to see if amongst his testimony.
If you guys remember that, you already know
that. I remember their GIS discussion.
Did you?
I don't remember the health plan.
The Oregon Health Plan portion,
I don't remember that. I do remember GIS.
The health plan, let's see if I can resurrect that. 12 billion health fund care costs in Oregon. 8 pieces of legislation beginning in 1987. Portions 1, 2, and 3, Oregon Health Plan, Oregon Health Services Commission, Oregon Health Resources Commission, C packages 2 and 3 of the reports not to administer programs, Oregon Health Council number 1, 9 members. The FEOP from the 1997, that's the federal or the Family Health Insurance Assistance Package Program, and then the CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program Package, 17 full council meetings, 14 subcommittee meetings, 7 task force meetings. I'm trying to remember who it was that, or see if I had written down who had testified on behalf of that health plan. I didn't write down the name of who testified on that particular day. Was it Fight?
Spate,
Mr. Spate. Let's see, hospital inpatient discharge abstracts,
that is pursuant to statutes, hospital financial information, A&D Rural Hospital, providing, service and survey information to hospitals, provide industry as well, without fee, helps to know where the next cardiovascular unit will be placed statewide. And then there were some that had nominal prices if and when sold. That is providing health care packages. Special reports, and that goes on to part of the PGDB, Public Employee Benefit Board. But the question that we talked about, some of the things related to this, but did we talk specifically about are we, and when we get to this budget point, to take the research budget away from this budget and remove it?
Move it over to the over to the human resources. I think that's the
thing we ever talked about. That.
Maybe. And I don't recall ever. I do know that the co-chairs have discussed trying to, as much as they possibly can, to try and bring bits and pieces of budgets that, whether it's from the governor's office or whether it's from Department of Administrative Services, that may have bits and pieces and chunks to try and move those into common budgets as much as possible.
Okay. Well, if that's what they're doing, I think we need to know that. Okay, that's fine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that even though the funding will be provided in another budget bill, the organizational structure and function and responsibilities of this office would remain the same. Number 10, there are two packages in the Governor's Natural Resource Office that the co-chairs indicated that there's not general fund money to fund. That's the package 241, which is Ben Hooligan Salmon Plan to the Willamette Valley and some other additional work on the Salmon Plan. That's $983,425 and 3 FTE. The Washington, D.C. office that had been established during the current biennium with a borrowed staff person. This was to make it permanent and funded with general fund. That's one FTE and $225,420, which is deleted.
Why did we delete this?
Again, this is part of the Governor's Natural Resources Office. There have been a number of discussions, I think, again, the same thing about as with the Health Plan Policy and Research Office, to get a handle on where all those costs are and what they are.
Discussions in this committee?
These two packages were discussed both in this committee and in the Natural Resources Committee. The decision not to fund these, I think, is based on the shape of the legislative budget and the resources that are within it.
The agency people, I think, need to say about this. All of these things are things you've agreed to someplace?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, these are not things that would necessarily be on the governor's list, clearly. These were, in terms of the 4%, those were the reductions that the governor had signed up and said, we are willing to take those and can make those work. So these do go beyond and what they require when they occur. They are enhancements. I want to be clear. These are enhancements to current program, at least in package 10 and 11. 12 is not. 12 is fund shift. We are not going to be receiving some of the foundation money and the Oregon Health Plan that we had received in the past. So that is a fund shift and is more into base program. The the issue becomes that then you look back at the 4%, and I need to stop. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. For the record, Teresa McKee from the Department of Administrative Services. The reductions, the 4% reduction, then do go into base program as well for the Governor's Natural Resource Office and the organization offices.
9, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all of those reductions are not part of the 4%. They're additional reductions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, Package 8 is, as I understand it, and Georgine, feel free to correct me, as I understand it, is more of saying the lottery funds are not going to come directly to the Department of Administrative Services. They are going to go to the natural resource agencies, who will then purchase the services from us. So this reduction, as I understand it, is not really a reduction. What it will do is take lottery funds out and leave other funds in that then agencies have to buy the services. Is that
that is my
correct?
Incorrect.
Did you say that? I was wondering.
It is, Mr. Chair, Senator. So I believe the lottery funds, you will see natural resource agencies. The theory is that they will, in the natural resources subcommittee, receive lottery funds. So they will have an increase in their other fund limitation for lottery funds to purchase geographic information services from the Department of Administrative Services.
And in all fairness, it's a kind of shift, but it doesn't represent a lessening of service.
Correct. I think it will require more discussion between our agency then and the natural resource agencies over what services are bought and how does that work so that we can ensure that we have enough revenue to support a basic program.
How about health plan policy and research? Is that service going to continue?
On number 9, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that all that's happening here is similar, that it will be a little different. It just will be in a different appropriation bill, is my understanding, on number 9. It's number 10, 11, and 12 that do actually get into real reductions. But 8 and 9, as I understand, are not reductions. But
so what about 10 and the salmon plan? This is almost $1 million.
Number 10, Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, is the package is an enhancement to the current program level. That's to provide services into the Willamette Valley related to the salmon plan.
In fact, they're refusing the package.
So it's refusing the package. The only thing to make sure is understood is that if you look back at number 1, a reduction of $120,000 in general fund, that is something that we did bring to the table but would have been a reduction from the level of this package. So if you take both the package and the 4% reductions, that does require, we won't go forward with the package, and we will have to cut into the base program.
Okay. Can you afford to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, can we afford to do it? There will have to be reductions in that base program, and I would, if you have questions about that, I will make sure we can talk to Paula Burgess, is probably the right one on that to talk about what exactly would she reduce into the base program.
PC office and the 1 FTE, that's just an elimination of that proposal.
Correct.
Right? Not
correct.
Nobody there in the position now.
I believe that is correct. That was original. Correct. That, no, Mr. Chair and staff, no, at this point that is not a filled position. Is that correct? Maybe not.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Laurie Warner. This is the situation where Kevin Smith's position was funded just by NAM, and he was staffed out of EDD's budget, and they had to give up positions in a glide slope type arrangement with the legislature this biennium to cut 5 positions. So that position is no longer there to support Kevin Smith. And so this was a position so that to continue the work that he was doing in Washington, D.C., and the funding was lottery funding to do that.
This position goes, and his work will be discontinued.
There will have to be a choice, yes, made about how to accomplish that work.
Some other money will have to be found.
Correct.
We will will have to make choices within their budget.
So this really does weaken the operation on the salmon front, which seems to me maybe a mistake, considering how important that is. How about the health policy and research? That's going to go package 50. There's a reduction of in item 12.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we have talked to Barney Spate, who is the administrator of that program. It will require potentially looking at whether there are positions that would have to be eliminated or workload handled other ways. He will, of course, look first at how to tighten further. But again, this is similar to number 10 in that it is actually, we had already come forth with $62,500 and 4%. Those are going to be absorbed, as I understood, in the services and supplies category. This would be a cut because they will no longer receive, they were receiving other funds from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that will not continue to come in. And so this was a package to say we want to maintain those programs and services that we started under other funds, that, and we no longer can get those, and can we continue that? So we did not allow it at the current service level. It is an enhancement, if you will, because the understanding was that those funds went away, so did the program level. But the funds are drying up, so he will have to look in that division at what is reduced and what services aren't provided.
One thing I did want to say in fairness, too, and that is that a lot of these issues are being examined relative to Measure 66 and the salmon tide, excuse me, and the natural resources as to how some of the beneficial portions of the package can be now provided as opposed to using lottery funds, general funds, and actually using the lottery funds directly from the Measure 66 portion of it. And the governor's budget did contemplate using, and if I can use that terrible term, I seem to get nailed by it every time, but it's kind of a backfill to accommodate that because in the past this has been a general fund kind of an approach, but now will come from the Measure 66 dollars coming from one half of Measure 66.
Sure, I just hope that we will just slow down a little bit and talk about some of these big ones so that we're at least reassured as to what is happening and
absolutely
what is happening and maybe know why it's happening.
Absolutely. And to that end, Senator Trow, let's do this. We're at a natural stopping point as we move from package 12 and the miscellaneous items, and particularly after having gone into the other actions to meet the legislative goals 8 through 12. If there are questions, I would invite you to go ahead and review those with both the staff of the Department of Administrative Services and their capable folks, as well as Legislative Fiscal Office.
Sure.
There's been a great deal of coordination and the Legislative Fiscal with the Natural Resources Subcommittee.
How soon do you want to raise questions?
We'll probably, again, like we're doing right now, we'll probably come back to this tomorrow and then probably wrap up both of these two issues, I hope, by Friday, as necessary. And if there are questions, I want to leave it open so that we don't move faster than.
Well, I would invite the VAS people to make an appointment, come see me as soon as we can this week.
Okay. With that, we're going to go ahead and extend the public hearing portion as well as this work session on House Bill 5002. We will extend this to evening time tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much.